Chapter 19. But the war did not end. Instead, it seemed to move ever closer to us, and we heard once again the ominous rumble of gunfire. But convalescence was almost over now, and although still weak from my illness, I was already being used for light work around the veterinary hospital. I worked in a team of two hauling hay and feed from the nearest station or pulling the dung cart around the yard. I felt fresh and eager for work once more. My legs and shoulders filled out, and as the weeks passed, I found I was able to work longer hours in harness. Sergeant Thunder had detailed Albert to be with me whenever I was working, so that we were scarcely ever apart. But from time to time, though Albert, like all the veterinary orderlies, would be dispatched to the front with the veterinary wagon to bring back the latest horse casualties, and then I would pine and fret, my head over the stable door, until I heard the echoing rumble of the wheels on the cobbles and saw his cheery wave as he came in under the archway and into the yard. In time, I too went back to the war, back to the front line. God, he never gets a break. Back to the whine and roar of the shells that I had hoped I'd left behind me forever. Fully recovered now in the pride of Major Martin and his veterinary unit, I was often used as the lead horse in the tandem team that hauled the veterinary wagon back and forth to the front. But Albert was always with me, and so I was never afraid of the guns anymore. Like Topthorn before him, he seemed to sense that I needed a continual reminder that he was with me and protecting me. His soft, gentle voice, his songs and his whistling tunes held me steady as the shells came down. All the way there and back, he would be talking to me to reassure me. Sometimes it would be of the war. "David says Jerry is about finished. Shot the bolt," he said. One humming summer's day as we passed line upon line of infantry and cavalry going up the front line. We were carrying an exhausted grey mare, a water carrier that had been rescued from the mud at the front. "Fair knocked us for six, they did, further up the line, they say." But David says that was their last gasp, that once those Yankees find their fighting legs and if we stand firm, then it could all be over by Christmas. I hope he's right, Joey. He usually is. Got a lot of respect for what David says, everyone has. Sometimes he would talk of home and his girl up in the village. Maisie Cobbledick, she's called Joey, works in the milking parlour up in Anstey's farm, and she bakes bread. Oh, Joey, she bakes bread like you've never tasted before. And even Mother says her pastries are the tastiest in the parish. Father says she's too good for me, but he doesn't mean it. He says it to please me. And she's got eyes. Eyes as blue as cornflowers, hair as gold as ripe corn, and her skin smells like honeysuckle, except when she first comes out of the dairy. I keep well away from her then. "I've told her all about you, Joey. And she was the only one, mind you, that said I was right to come over here and find you. She didn't want me to go. Don't think that. Cried her heart out at the station when I left, so she must love me a little, mustn't she?" "Come on, you silly you. Say something." That's the only thing I've got against you, Joey. You're the best listener I've ever known. But I never know what the devil you're thinking. You just blink your eyes and waggle those ears of yours from east to west and south to north. I wish you could talk, Joey. I really do. Then one evening there was terrible news from the front. News that Albert's friend David had been killed, along with the two horses that were hauling the veterinary wagon that day. "A stray shell," Albert told me, as he brought in the straw for my stable. "That's what they said it was. One stray shell out of nowhere and he's gone. I shall miss him, Joey. We shall both miss him, won't we?" And he sat down in the straw in the corner of the stable. "You know what he was, Joey, before the war? He had a fruit cart in London outside Covent Garden. Thought the world of you, Joey. Told me so often enough. And he looked after me, Joey, like a brother. He was to me. 20 years old. He'd his whole life ahead of him. all wasted now because of one stray shell. He always told me, Joey, he'd say, at least if I goes, there'll be no one that'll miss me, only my cart. And I can't take that with me. More's the pity. He was proud of his cart. Showed me a photo of himself once, stood by it. All painted it was, piled high with fruit, and him standing there with a smile like a banana spread all across his face. He looked up at me and brushed the tears from his cheeks. He spoke now through gritted teeth. It's just you and me, left now, Joey. And I tell you, we're going to get home, both of us. I'm going to ring that tenor bell again in church. I'm going to eat my Maisie's bread and pastries, and I'm going to ride you down by the river again. David always said he was somehow sure that I'd get home. And he was right. I'm going to make him right. When the end of the war did come, it came swiftly, almost unexpectedly. It seemed to the men around me there was little joy, little celebration of victory, only a sense of profound relief that at last it was finished and done with. Albert left the happy cluster of men gathered together in the yard that cold November morning and strolled over to talk to me. 5 minutes' time and it'll be finished, Joey. All over. Jerry's had about enough of it, and so have we. No one really wants to go on anymore. At 11 o'clock, the guns would stop, and then that would be that. Only wish that David could have been here to see it. Since David's death, Albert had not been himself. I had not once seen him smile or joke, and he often fell into prolonged brooding silences when he was with me. There was no more singing, no more whistling. I tried all that I could to comfort him, resting my head on his shoulder and nickering gently to him, but he seemed quite inconsolable. Even the news that the war was finally ending brought no light back to his eyes. The bell in the clock tower over the gateway rang out 11 times, and the men shook each other solemnly by the hand or clapped each other on the back before returning to the stables. The fruits of victory were to prove bitter indeed for me. But to begin with, the end of the war changed little. The veterinary hospital operated as it always had done, and the flow of sick and injured horses seemed rather to increase than to diminish. From the yard gate, we saw the unending columns of fighting men marching jauntily back to the railway stations, and we looked on at the tanks and guns and wagons rolled by on their way home. But we were left where we were. Like the other men, Albert was becoming impatient. Like them, he wanted only to get back home as quickly as possible. Morning parade took place as usual every morning in the centre of the cobbled yard, followed by Major Martin's inspection of the horses and stables. But one dreary, drizzling morning, with the wet cobbles shining grey in the early morning light, Major Martin did not inspect the stables as usual. Sergeant Thunder stood the men at ease, and Major Martin announced the re-embarkation plans for the unit. He was finishing his short speech. So we shall be at Victoria Station by 6 o'clock on Saturday evening with any luck. Chances are you'll all be home by Christmas. Permission to speak, sir? Sergeant Thunder ventured. Carry on, Sergeant. It's about the horses, sir, Sergeant Thunder said. I think the men would like to know what's going to happen with the horses. Will they be with us on the same, sir, or will they be coming along later? Major Martin shifted his feet and looked down at his boots. He spoke softly, as if he did not want to be heard. No, Sergeant, he said. I'm afraid the horses won't be coming with us at all. There was an audible muttering of protest from the parading soldiers. You mean, sir, said the sergeant, you mean that they'll be coming on a later ship? No, Sergeant, said the major. Slapping his side, with his swagger stick. I don't mean that. I mean exactly what I said. I mean they will not be coming with us at all. The horses will be staying in France.
Eh, sir, said the sergeant. But how can they, sir? Who'll be looking after them? We've got cases here that need attention all day and every day.
The major nodded, his eyes still looking at the ground. You'll not like what I have to tell you, he said. I'm afraid a decision has been taken to sell off many of the army's horses here in France. All the horses we have here are either sick or have been sick. It's not considered worthwhile to transport them back home. My orders are to hold a horse sale here in this courtyard tomorrow morning. A notice has been posted in the neighbouring towns to that effect. They are all to be sold by auction.
Auctioned off, sir? Our horses to be put under the hammer after all they've been through?
The sergeant spoke politely, but only just. But you know what that means, sir. You know what will happen.
Yes, sergeant, said Major Martin. I know what will happen to them. But there's nothing anyone can do.
We're in the army, sergeant. And I don't have to remind you that orders are orders.
But you know what they'll go for, said Sergeant Thunder, barely disguising the disgust in his voice. There's thousands of horses out here in France, sir. War veterans there. Do you mean to say that after all they've been through, after all we've done looking after them, after all you've done, sir, that they're to end up like that? I can't believe that you mean it, sir.
Well, I'm afraid they do, said the major stiffly. Some of them may end up as you suggest. I can't deny it, sergeant. You've every right to be indignant. Every right. I'm not too happy about it myself, as you can imagine. But by tomorrow, most of these horses will have been sold off, and we should be moving out ourselves the day after. And you know, sergeant, and I know there's not a blind thing I can do about it.
Albert's voice ran out across the yard.
What? All of them, sir. Every one of them. Even Joey, that we brought back from the dead. Even him.
Major Martin said nothing, but turned on his heel and walked away.
And that's the end of that chapter. Ah, lads. Poor Joey. Doesn't get a break, does he? So we've only two chapters left.
Oh, so you'll have to wait now for the next.
Enjoy.